You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another motherfucking episode of the City of Man podcast. This is motherfucking Ed Song, Associate Professor of Philosophy at fucking Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California. And I am with Associate Professor Coyle Neal, a motherfucking professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University. Coyle, how the heck are you?
I'm doing okay. Ed, it feels like it's been a long time since you've hosted and you're just making the most of it.
Well, yes. And I wanted to take this episode just to say this. I think you are the most motherfucking country.
You know, if we've titled this episode Being Offended, everyone will know what's going on. So we're going to have to give it some innocuous title.
If you've made it this far in the show, you will perhaps have figured out that our topic today is offensiveness, an issue that is unavoidable regardless of where you are in American social life. Maybe it's particularly an issue on college campuses where Coyle and I dwell, where student protests regarding the conduct of professors or other incidents that are arising on campus are generating a lot of widespread attention. Equally, our political life is characterized by outrage and offense, anger and vitriol of a kind that is, well, I don't want to say we've never seen it in the history of our country, because certainly we've been in periods that are worse, but are unique to recent periods. And so Coyle and I thought we would get together and try to think about and break down what offensiveness is, like what it is, how we respond to it, and maybe what we should do about it.
So this isn't an episode about us cussing each other out.
No, we can do that at the end.
And right, then. Off air.
It's kind of like sometimes I'll write an email, even though I'm not going to send it. Do you do that? But sometimes I just sort of...
I don't. I'd be too worried. My finger would slip and I'd hit the send button or something.
Yeah, there is a danger that usually I'll compose it in a Word document and not directly in an email. But there's a lot to be said about composing the email that you know you won't send. Well, why don't we jump into this and talk about offense? What does it mean, Coyle, to be offended?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not the same thing as being offensive, right? Someone can be doing something that is offensive, and I may not be offended. Or someone can be doing something that is not offensive, and I might be offended. Or they might be doing something that's offensive, and I am offended. So there's not necessarily always an automatic cause and effect relationship between those two things. I've been thinking about this. I don't know that I can say much more about it than that. I guess there's a sort of a visceral, emotional reaction that is deeply personal to something that someone else is doing. I suppose you could be offended by like an act of nature, the wind that's been blowing incessantly here in Bolivar for the last week is offensive to me. But I feel like that would be weird.
Yeah, that would certainly be an extended use of the term.
Right. So it's someone else does something, and I feel as if it is a personal attack upon me. Now again, the question of whether or not it actually is, that's maybe more open, right?
Yeah. You know, I guess when I think about offense as a category, sort of two things, I mean, there are lots of things that come to mind, but two things that I think come to mind is that with regard to offense, I think those are moral judgments. They're not just judgments about taste. Right. Like, you might like the opera and I like monster truck shows, but I don't find offense at your different judgments. The thing that gives offensiveness its oomph, I think, is the fact that it's rooted in moral judgments about things. That some kind of value has been broached or has been broached. And so, and we're reacting to that. So judgments of offense, I think, are always moral in that way. And then the second thing, and I'm not sure if you were implying this in what you were saying, or maybe even if you would disagree, but I don't think it's the case that an action doesn't have to be intentional in order for it to be offensive. It certainly often is, and maybe even, well, I was going to say usually. I take that back. It often is, but I don't think it needs to be intentional.
No. I wasn't trying to comment on the intent of the offender. It's more the question of, if I'm a neutral third party looking at this action, right? Aside from the intent of the offender, should that have been offensive to the person who is offended? Right. Sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes the answer is no. And that yes or no answer is not necessarily a clear guide to whether or not someone has been offended. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. But it's not tied directly to the thing that is said or done as being done intentionally to provoke a response from somebody. I mean, sometimes that'll happen.
Even aside from intent, right? It may be an action which should not lead to offendedness, and yet it does.
Yeah.
Or it may be an action that should lead to offendedness, and yet sometimes it doesn't, right? That's any number of combinations could work there.
All right. So maybe we should give an example to talk about.
Yeah. And I mean, the problem is every time you start giving examples, because it's so subjective, you can always find someone who's not offended and someone who is.
Well, that's right. But we want to say that what makes an act offensive or not isn't whether everybody agrees that it is. What makes it offensive is whether or not it's offensive.
Right. So if someone carves a swastika into a Jewish student's locker in school, right? That is offensive.
Yes.
I think that is objectively offensive. Now, you might have just a thick-skinned student who's like, you know what? I don't care. Whatever. Idiots are going to be idiots.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that the action itself is inherently offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I did you hear about the case? It was just a week or two ago of a high school party in Orange County, in a particularly wealthy part of Orange County, where a bunch of high school students got together and they arranged their red Solo cups full of beer in the shape of a swastika. And then a picture of it got out and consternation and uproar ensued. And, I mean, like, that's a nice example. So that, I think, is offensive. It isn't as offensive as, the act of scrawling one on the Jewish student's locker. I mean, it is offensive, but it transcends the realm of offensive and starts getting into other things. But the cups in the shape of a swastika, that's pretty offensive, I think.
Right.
And then we can ask a kind of a question like, was it done intentionally? I mean, I don't think that the students are like aren't necessarily, I mean, they could be, but I think they're not necessarily being anti-Semitic. I think it was meant to be a lark. They knew they were having fun transgressing a boundary that they know exists. I expect that was going on there. I mean, it could be worse, but so it was kind of intentionally offensive. But in a not serious way. But I think that's pretty offensive.
Yeah. And maybe we can get into this later. Like under what circumstances should you be offended, right? I think that one is. Well, even then, I would say there are people there who should be offended, and probably people who shouldn't be, just depending on all sorts of things.
What's an example of a person who shouldn't be offended?
So you've just described this thing to me. That my literal only connection to it is the story you've just told me. Mm. I think if I were to fly into an outrage right now, that would be inappropriate.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I'm not the best bellwether of this. I'm pretty. I don't know what the right word is. Unoffendable. I'm apathetic enough, I guess, about most things that it takes a lot to offend me.
I think that's in part because you're a white man, but maybe that we can get to that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that it's true that the only people out there who don't get offended are white men. I don't know that that's the case.
I think that there's a way in which you aren't subject to the kind of daily and regular slights that persons of color are.
Right.
You know, and so, like, in the show, so here's an example. If you refer to me as being an Oriental person, I would take offense at that a little bit. A little bit. I mean, it's not like I would fly into an outrage, and it's not even necessarily the case that I would go out of my way to correct you. But that language, I think that language is a little bit offensive, and that people at this point in time should know better.
Right. And to be fair, if you referred to me as an Occidental person, I wouldn't care at all.
I don't even know what that means.
That's the opposite of Oriental.
Okay. So Occidental College in Los Angeles is like white college?
Western College is all that means. I'm sort of curious, and maybe we'll have to edit all of this out because, you know, it's going to offend our listeners. What would be the right way to refer? Like, what would Asian?
I would, yeah, so Asian. Korean. Let me say something about that. I mean, it's obviously the case that Oriental was the word of choice to refer to people of my ethnic extraction. You know, I mean, forever.
And not always in a derogatory way.
Oh, I mean, never in a derogatory way. So I think my parents will, I think they go back and forth, but sometimes my father will say Oriental people. And I wince at that a little bit. And probably, like, that language was completely acceptable, I don't know, up until something like, I'm just going to throw out, like, the mid to late 80s and into the 90s. And, I mean, I think even when I went to college, I might have said something. I think I was corrected by an Asian American student who said, I think I said Oriental. And they're like, oh, you shouldn't use that word. And I was like, well, why? And so here's the thing. I mean, Oriental kind of connotes a kind of an exoticness and a difference. That's why Asian people sort of take a little bit of offense at that language. So, you know, there's Oriental rugs. It's not the word Oriental that's inherently offensive. It's using it to describe persons. And so I suppose, I mean, certainly you can talk about Oriental rugs. And you can, I wouldn't say Oriental food. But the thing about it is that, like, that language is just, it connotes a kind of exoticness and a kind of a fascination with something because it's different. And now applying that to people is kind of objectifying. Like, I don't want people to think of me and look at me as being some exotic fancy. That's why the term is a little bit offensive.
Yeah, and like you said, that some of that is going to be generational, right? So,
yeah.
And again, we'll get to we should get to, you know, under what circumstances should you be offended? I think that if we were reading a book from the 1960s, and it used the word Oriental, I guess we now have a white guy telling an Asian individual when you should and shouldn't be offended. So, you know, feel free to take me to task for that. But I would suggest that would not be an appropriate occasion to be offended just because of the different settings, right?
Yeah, so I don't disagree with that. And again, like, on the scale of offensiveness, that things like that just, they barely register. But, you know, I mean, one thing about that is that, like, but you get that. And you get stuff like that pretty regularly. Oh, there's the whole, oh, hey, so I meet somebody new, and they're like, oh, well, where are you from? And I say, oh, I'm from California. And they're like, no, where'd you grow up? And I go, oh, I was born in Lynchburg, Virginia. And then they kind of give me, you know, the knowing kind of, no, where are you really from? And that's kind of offensive. I mean, again, like, just sort of barely registering on that. But the implication is that I don't really belong here. And there's this weird fetishistic kind of fascination with that. That just kind of feels weird and uncomfortable. Again, it's sort of like somebody is, like, looking at me and objectifying me and seeing me as some kind of, like, exotic fancy in the zoo to gawk at, you know?
Right.
And like, again, that's, you know, that happens. That happens. Let's say that happens to me 5 times a year. Let's say I get called Oriental 5 times a year. But, you know, little things like that add up. And so, you know, we should just talk about when it is appropriate and inappropriate to be offended. But I'll just say that one of the reasons why persons of color take offense at things like this, or women, I suppose, is that, I mean, they're all relatively low grade. But if somebody is, I mean, if I flick your ear, that's pretty low grade and that's not going to bother you. But if, like, I'm constantly flicking your ear, eventually you're going to get annoyed and angry. And eventually you're just going to snap. And that's kind of what happens. It's like somebody comes up and calls me Oriental or sort of weirdly fascinated with my ethnic background. And, like, that's not very offensive, but it's just the 20th time that that's happened to me. And it was right after somebody, you know, here's one thing that happens to me. And I'm like, you know, I'm Asian American. Like, everybody likes Asian American, right?
I don't know. If I say yes, is that offensive?
Yeah, that's right. Good, Coil. That was a test.
Yeah.
And you passed.
What? Tell me what the right answer is. Just tell me what you want me to say, and I will say it.
I mean, my point there is just that, I mean, obviously, the kind of discrimination and friction that Asian people experience is different than that of African Americans.
Oh, sure.
But my point is that, like, once a year, I'll be out running or something like that, and somebody will drive by and just, like, shout out something, like, straightforwardly racist. Like, they'll start shouting out Chinese-sounding sounds or say things like, go home, or things like that. That happens about once a year.
Yeah, and that's yeah, I have less experience with that than you do, obviously, and no experience with being the person shouting, because certainly when I'm driving a car, my first thought isn't, how can I hassle people on the sidewalk? I, you know, there are other things on my mind usually. Well, always, I guess. So do we want to talk about when you should be offended?
Yeah.
We keep
so
sort of dancing
about
around
when,
it.
Yeah, so let's, we are. I should have held my fire a little bit. So
No, it's okay.
What are the wrong and right times to take offense?
Well, I tend to think, and obviously you have put more thought into this than I have, but I do tend to think that the more personal it is, the more right the time is. By personal, I mean direct attacks, whether, again, leaving aside how intentional that is on the part of the person doing it, but is it aimed specifically at you or at, you know, someone you know? So the farther away it is, either in terms of distance from people or in time, I think that you might still be offended and you might still have opinions, but the scale of the response needs to be less. Right. So the swastika carved on the Jewish kid's locker, if that happens in my school, I think my reaction should be stronger to that than if I hear about that in a different city 20 years later. Right. I don't think it affects the objective offensiveness of the action necessarily, but I think it does affect how I should respond.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly the case that we are more psychologically and emotionally connected to things that happen close to us. So, you know, last year, a little more than a year ago, when the mudslides and debris flows affected our town, that was something that was a little bit traumatic for us. Reading about the tornadoes that hit parts of the Midwest a couple weeks ago, I mean, I read those stories and my heart ached and I was concerned, but obviously it didn't affect me in anything like the same kind of direct way. And that's just a fact about human psychology. But, you know, I mean, if you're appraising the objective offensiveness of any given act, I mean, in some ways...
Well, to give an example, if I'm walking down the street and someone walks by me screaming obscenities into their cell phone, and this is, as it happens, a real world example, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm walking by myself, whatever I think about whether people ought to be screaming obscenities in public, for the most part, I think my reaction is kind of not to care, or at least to say, they shouldn't be doing that internally, but not necessarily say anything externally. When walking down the street with my 2-year-old, I think there's I think there's more of a response called for there. Right? I think there's more of a response to say, hey, look, I'm walking with my kid and I'm not ready for him to know those words yet. Can you please keep it down?
Right? I'm going to teach him those words, not you, buddy. Yeah. Well, that's right. But then I would say, the difference there has to do with what makes an act offensive is what makes an act offensive. What makes that more offensive is that using bad language in the presence of children is worse than using bad language in the presence of adults.
Right. So with our parents' generation, I guess I don't know if this is true of your parents or not, but my parents didn't think a whole lot of rap music. And a lot of it was because of the content. Right. I honestly don't know what they thought about the music style, but I'm pretty sure that their objections were the words and the descriptions of things that you might have the same descriptions of things in country music as listeners to some of our country music episodes will hear, but without the same level of obscenity and without the same level of offensiveness. And again, the reaction being not just that this is inherently bad, but it's also being broadcast publicly, right? And who's listening to that and so on. So yeah, there's obviously a lot that goes into it, I think. And maybe this is my white guy perspective coming out here. Ed, set me straight.
No, I mean, certainly standards of offensiveness they're certainly culturally relative.
Sure.
I mean, because they're culturally relative, I think doesn't mean that they're insignificant. I mean, so, you know, the changing, even what I was just saying about Oriental and Asian people, and then certainly, you know, the evolution of how African-American people are referred to, like those, you know, it's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Yeah, have they changed their name yet? You know,
I don't think so. Have they?
I don't know.
I bet you anything they make a point of not of just trying to stick to the acronym and not unpacking it. But you can believe that, like, if they were starting that organization today, it wouldn't be called that. You know, and so there is just a way in which our standards about words or dress, you know, those standards change. And so there's certainly something subjective about the meaning of words and symbols. But I mean, just because they're subjective doesn't mean that they're not significant.
Right. And the problem is that we start to run, as we are experiencing in our culture, if we say that it's just subjective, then we're letting the person who is being offended define what offensive is. And we certainly want to be sympathetic when someone is genuinely and rightly offended, but we also don't necessarily want the most easily offended to define everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this gets back to what we're talking about in the classroom, right? Should college campuses be dominated not by a standard that kind of everyone agrees on, but by the standard that is acceptable to the touchiest?
Yeah, and so this is why this is all so controversial. Because it's attached to the subjective meanings of, again, like words and symbols, you know, and people can disagree on that.
Sure.
I mean, people do disagree with them. I mean, just because people do disagree about that doesn't mean that those things aren't objectively offensive, but it turns on our reactions to things. So, I mean, there is one controversy about teaching Huck Finn in high school, right? Which
just one?
Yeah, well, that's one recent example. Right. You know, which uses the N-word a lot and sort of talks about black people in a certain kind of way. And at the end of the day, I mean, Twain is very sympathetic with.
Sure.
I'm trying to put the point. I was going to say, like, sympathetic with slavery. He's not sympathetic with slavery, but I mean, he's sympathetic with the plight of African American persons in the time in which he's writing.
Right.
I think that's a little bit of the point of the book. So I haven't read the book in a long time. And so, I mean, like Huck Finn, that in some ways is the quintessential American novel. I mean, that is, Huck Finn is a founding myth for our country. You know, and some people are just going to, if we were talking, I mean, you use the example of the word Oriental appearing in earlier literature. And I was like, yeah, that's not a big deal. I think the N-word is a considerably bigger deal than Oriental Talk.
As evidenced by the fact that we won't say it on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there was a huge controversy at Santa Barbara City College, which is our big community college. And it's actually, it's like rated as being like the best community college in the country. And they were having this big public meeting debating the use of the Pledge of Allegiance before board meetings. There are, but I guess maybe they used to do it a while ago. I don't know how long ago they used to do it. And then people were arguing for its reinstatement. But there was an administrator who used the N-word, and, you know, not the N-word, but used the actual N-word at a public meeting. They were kind of quoting it, I guess, if you know what I mean. Like, right. They weren't using it, they were quoting it. And that caused a big uproar. And then there was this big public meeting where somebody from the audience got up and used the N-word again. Yeah, I think that's offensive. Now, what about the use of Huck Finn? Like, should we
wait,
stop
so you, you
Huck?
Think you think the guy quoting it was offensive?
Yeah, I think the way in which they were quoting it. So the guy at the public meeting said, you can't even say, and then the N-word, without getting in trouble.
Well, okay, so yeah, the guy at the public meeting, but the administrator who was quoting
it. And you know, the administrator's usage was similar.
Right, so if he is quoting it just so that he can say it, yes, and get away with saying I was quoting it, yes, but I think there are other circumstances where maybe you're in a classroom setting and you're dealing with, which is also an example that's come up recently, and I forget which school this was at. But it was a history teacher who read a passage out of like a Civil War diary or something in class.
Sure.
And it, I mean, he got in trouble as well. And I don't want to say he got suspended, but I don't have the story in front of me. So, and certainly tone deaf to the current culture. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt that he was that, but that's not, again, is that the same thing as saying that he ought to have been punished for the offensive language? I think that's a different question.
I don't disagree that it was a different question, but if it were me, I wouldn't say it. And I wouldn't say it for practical reasons, because you're just dumb if you think that you can say that without there being an uproar. But just because I don't want to cause offense.
Yeah, and I'm not a history teacher, so I suppose I'm not the one to speak into this, but can you teach African-American history in a way that is like legitimately giving a flavor of the history if you never assign readings with the word in it?
Oh, okay, so that's a little bit different.
Or if you assign them, but you just never read them out loud in class.
Well, if I was reading it out loud in class, I would say N-word. That's what I would say.
Right.
And do you lose anything there? I don't think you lose anything there.
Sure. Right, and that's what I would do too, although I...
You know, with regard to assigning texts, like, you know, I would want to say that Huck Finn is a particularly important book. I don't think we should stop teaching it. But I would certainly spend some time before you crack the book open to sort of talk about the context and why we're reading it and what's going to be in it and all of that. I guess that's a kind of a trigger warning. I don't know what you think about trigger warnings in class.
I give one every semester, but it's kind of an inverse trigger warning. It's I don't care if you're offended. Deal with it. You're adults. Like, this is a college class, and we're going to talk about tough issues. And if you can't handle it, there are other professors on class who teach similar classes that will fill the same requirements. So that's not usually the kind of trigger warnings that are given, but that's what my students get.
So you're basically like, I don't care if you take offense at this.
Pretty much. If you're the sort of delicate princess who can't deal with these tough issues, my class probably is not the class for you.
Yeah, so... And so, I mean, would you say the N-word instead of saying the N-word?
No. But again, that's relative to the the political climate. Yeah, just because of the political climate, I wouldn't want to have to deal with the fallout of that. I would think that if I were reading, again, if we were, you know, reading together a historical text in class, I think that would be fair game to do, but I wouldn't do it for practical reasons.
How is what you said different than a professor coming in saying, hey, I curse a lot, And that's just how I am. I don't care what you think about it. If you have a problem with that, then go take another class.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty similar. My predecessor apparently was known for his potty mouth in class, and I think he did something similar.
And do you think that's okay?
I mean, I don't curse a lot myself, but I mean, yeah, I think that's I think it's fine so long as you're not, you know, blaspheming and I suppose leaving aside sin questions. Yeah, I think that's fine. Now, I think that's fine in a college class in a way that it may not be fine in a fifth grade class.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, well, for sure.
And I think there are at a Baptist college, there are maybe kinds of profanity and amounts of profanity that are more inappropriate than others. But yeah, I would say having a professor who swears in class is fine.
Okay.
Remember, I'm not very easily offended, so I'm probably not the ideal bellwether here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was talking to someone about this the other day, the biblical injunction against coarse language. Do you have a view about that?
So the thing that always springs to mind for me is not taking the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah.
So I certainly, in that sense, I would have an inverted view of obscenity from what our culture has, you know, sort of the hierarchy of profanity that begins with bodily functions as the very, very worst ones, and then ends with, you know, oh my God, as sort of the almost not profane at all. I think theologically we should probably switch that around, which is not the same thing as saying that I'm free and easy with the F word, you know, yet another word we won't say on this podcast. But that's not because I think it's theologically accurate. I think it's just because that's what our culture says.
Fork you, Coyle.
Yeah, yeah, right. So does that make sense? Now, the broader term of coarse language, yeah, again, I would hesitate to say that there are specific words that are just automatically off limits. I would certainly say there are coarse ways of talking that we should not regularly engage in as Christians.
Yeah, but then, sorry, I thought that those are the words that you use in class or that your predecessor used in class.
Yeah, so well, and again, I suppose I'd have to think more about that. There is a way to use profanity that I don't necessarily do because I don't care about it, I suppose, one way or another. But there's a way to use profanity that's coarse, and there's a way to use profanity that's just part of the way that you, like, are making a point in class or are, yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think more specifically about that.
The Bible, certainly there are all kinds of injunctions against cursing, but by that I think they literally mean cursing.
Right.
But then, you know, I think the most relevant verse is Ephesians 5, where Paul talks about how there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. Hard to know what to make of that in some ways.
Right, so certainly if you are in class making lewd comments and saying crude things specifically for the point of getting a reaction from your students,
yeah,
right, that would be clearly against the scriptural injunction.
No, so that's filthiness, that's coarse jesting?
Yeah, this is an issue every once in a while. One of the Supreme Court cases that I teach is about freedom of speech in a public school. And in the court case is a transcript of this student's speech that he gave. And it is full of innuendo, right? Just kind of beginning to end, it is one long sex joke.
Okay.
So, you know, is that appropriate for a Christian college classroom or not? I think it is because it's in a Supreme Court case and it's actually a really important Supreme Court case.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think that's fine. Just as in my film class, I do show R-rated movies, and
yeah,
I give the trigger warning at the beginning of the semester that there will be, you know, profanity and nudity and violence and we're watching movies too. They tend to go along well with it. So. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? I've been talking a lot about all of this. We're kind of off against some offensiveness.
Yeah. So there's a specific question about language, and I think in a lot of ways that is really the only biblical verse that speaks directly to obscenity rather than cursing. So we shouldn't curse people. Right. I'm not regularly in the habit of like doing a good old fashioned Old Testament curse on people.
Right.
But yeah, it's hard to know what filthiness and silly talk and coarse jesting are.
Well, I mean, it is, but it's also, you kind of know when you're doing it.
I guess.
Yeah, my students, I forget what the book is, but one of the texts I assign has in a footnote, it's a book about town government, like town meetings, and there's a footnote in it that's like a clipping from a newspaper, and it's got the F word in it. And so far, without fail, I have some student who takes delight in sort of reading from the textbook in class. But yeah, I mean, it's usually not coming from me, but it is in class and it's part of the class materials. So,
you know, getting back to, I think I jumped us into this rabbit hole a while ago.
Sure.
This question of like, well, the general question was, when should we take offense at things?
Right, and it's always easier to talk about when is it okay to be offensive than when is it okay to be offended. Right, it's just an easier.
Oh, you know, that's an interesting question. I suppose in both instances, though, I'm going to defer in the direction of being sensitive to people's proclivities. I actually, somebody used this analogy in a big public lecture recently about, so Paul's injunction about eating meats sacrificed to idols. And so Paul is like, hey, we all know that this is okay, right? But some of our brothers and sisters find that to be a stumbling block. And so it's okay, but out of deference to them, I'm not going to do it if it's going to lead them astray or cause them offense. And, you know, so that's an example of a way in which you might have the right, and that's bad language, but it might be perfectly appropriate for you to engage in an activity, but if that's going to offend someone else, then, like, you should be sensitive to that.
Sure.
I mean, I think that is an important general rule. And then, but even more than that, so somebody used that example in a big public event here talking about white depictions of Jesus on campus. And so they were sort of talking about how, like, if my brother or sister of color takes offense at, if certain things are, you know, depictions of white Jesus are offensive to them, then, like, you know, we should be sensitive about that. And then I took issue with that point a little bit in my own head, just because, like, in the example, the point is, we can eat meat. These people wrongly think that we shouldn't eat meat, and so out of deference to them, I'm not going to eat meat. Whereas I think that doesn't parallel the example, or doesn't always parallel, or often parallel the example. Because, I mean, I don't think it's wrong for somebody to take offense at certain kinds of things. So all of this is to say that, like, I think we should be very deferential in the way that we talk about things. Whether people are being overly sensitive, or, you know, and then especially when they're not being overly sensitive, and then they're being appropriately sensitive. And they're just responding to microaggressions.
Right. And in some sense, we've been talking in this episode, we've been using examples that are obviously offensive, right? When it starts being border cases or things that maybe shouldn't be offensive at all, right? That's when this is more of an issue. I'm looking for an example out of this article. Did you want to talk about the...
Sorry, you should just say that the article that you're referring to is a pretty well-known article that was written by Jonathan Haidt, called The Coddling of the American Mind. And he wrote that with Greg Lukianoff. And it was originally an article that was published in The Atlantic in September of 2015. And then more recently, the two of them developed it into a full-blown book. But the book and the article are called The Coddling of the American Mind.
Yeah, and in the article, I have not read. You've read the book, right?
No, I haven't read the book. Though lots of people on lots of people around here are reading the book. I've read the article,
Which I've also read, and I'm now struggling to find the example that I wanted to use. It was of this university had put up a display of things that you weren't supposed to say, like examples of microaggressions that you weren't supposed to say in class. And because all of these things were included in the display itself gets declared to be a microaggression. Trying to find the list of and this is in UC University of California system. So the list of these microaggressions included things like America is the land of opportunity. I think there this becomes a more difficult issue when we take a statement like that and say, all right, someone has been offended by this statement. Does that person being offended, does their reaction, does that merit shutting down the statement itself? So, you know, carving a swastika into the Jewish kid's locker, obviously that merits a massive response, right? That merits all sorts of things in response to that. Someone saying America is the land of opportunity, I think that's a harder sell to make.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I guess my general attitude towards these things is to be deferential to people who might take offensive things at things, or at least want to engage in a conversation about like why those particular things are offensive, and then maybe why. I mean, in some instances, I would want to sort of defend the speech act in question that led to the offense. But in general, my attitude is, and I think our attitude should be to be differential.
Right. And I think there's I agree with that. Certainly as someone who is not easily offended, I think it is my obligation to try to be more aware of, you know, when people are offended than I would otherwise normally be, given that my default setting is basically apathy. Like, my default setting is, I don't care what you say, you're not going to offend me, say whatever you want. I think because of that, it's sort of on me to know, oh, hey, that's my default setting, so I need to work a little bit harder to make sure that I'm treating people well. I think that goes the other way, too. I think if you're the sort of person who is easily offended, I think you have an obligation to say, you know what? I am the sort of person who is easily offended. I should try to shut that off sometimes. I should not try to dominate or shut down conversations or shut out things I don't want to hear because I don't want to hear them, even if they are genuinely offensive, right? Even if they are things that I actually really don't want to hear and they're problematic. So I think as with the example you get from the New Testament, we ought not eat the meat in such a way that offends the weaker brother. I do think there's also an obligation the other direction for the person to say, you know what, I kind of am the weaker brother here. And that is something I need to work on in terms of maturity.
Yeah, so maybe that is sometimes or even often right. I guess the thing that bothers me in that example is that insofar as we're talking about, it depends on the example. So I would say an African-American brother or sister who chafes at the use of the N-word, or an Asian-American brother, whether or not it's a brother or sister is irrelevant. Person or a woman who's getting called honey at the office. I wouldn't call them being the weaker brother. I mean, they shouldn't be called those things. Those things are offensive. They're not super offensive. And so here's the thing. This is why I like the language of microaggressions, I think, is really people, I mean, this article, they make a big deal out of microaggressions. But the thing about it's like it's such a great, really specific example. Because you're right. If somebody calls me Oriental once, like, that's not a big deal. But the thing about instances like that is that I mean, not exclusively, but especially women and persons of color, it's like we face that stuff pretty regularly, you know? And again, if I flick your ear once, you're not even going to say anything. But if I flick your ear once on the hour, eventually you're going to get angry and blow up at me. And I'm going to be like, what's your problem? I'm just messing around with you.
Right. Well, and again, I agree with that when we're talking about the stuff that is super clear. It's that stuff that's on the bubble. That's where it's more problem. So again, America is the land of opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, now wait a second. Like, I think those sort of things that, yes, I understand why some people think that's a microaggression. I would hope they can understand why other people say, no, that's actually not a microaggression.
Yeah.
Right. I think that that's where we need to have people moving towards each other, and the movement does need to genuinely come from both sides. Again, the stuff that is obvious, you know, that the use of the N-word, particularly not just in sort of historical settings, but like in intentionally offensive ways. Yeah, of course. No one is saying that doesn't merit being offended.
Yeah. All right. So how about some other examples? So blackface.
Now we're in the 80s. Obviously offensive, right?
Yeah, well, so here's the thing. You say obviously offensive. I say obviously offensive. Not everybody's saying obviously offensive. Mm. You know, in the 80s, 90s, and today, like...
I will say, I'm kind of curious. What have you seen the movie Tropic Thunder?
I have, yes.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? It's Robert Downey Jr. in blackface.
Yeah, so things like that I think are trickier. Artistic things like that I think are trickier. Part of what's going on there, I understand why people find that offensive. Part of what's going on there is like that is like a satiric commentary on blackface.
Obviously, right? So is it okay to go to a costume party as a satiric example of blackface? However culturally tone deaf it obviously would be.
I'm finding it, that's the thing that you can do in a work of art or in a movie.
So Robert Downey Jr. can do it and no one else.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't do that. It's different.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
How about dressing up as, you know, so the Halloween costume thing, you know, so you and I were talking before this episode, and I wanted to talk about the case at Yale that happened a few years ago.
Sure.
And that got so much attention. I mean, so this was one of those instances in which a lot of people were concerned about the state of free speech at Yale because there was a pretty big student protest, especially revolving a video or a series of videos where African-American students were screaming at the master of Silliman College. The circumstances were this. The dean of Yale College, in advance of Halloween, sent out a big open letter to the Yale community. And was like, hey, Halloween is coming up. This is a time of great celebration and fun, but we also want to caution people against wearing offensive costumes.
Meaning what? Like, by offensive costumes?
Well, blackface, for one. all right, so let's go through a list. Offensive, not offensive.
Yeah, yes.
All right, so blackface.
Wait, are you asking me if it's offensive? We've established I am not a good judge of this.
So blackface, offensive, not offensive?
Certainly offensive.
Offensive, yes, you and I both agree. Dressing up as a Nazi, offensive or not offensive?
Yeah, offensive.
Pretty offensive, okay. Dressing up as...
slutty nurse, Ed. How about a slutty nurse? I mean, as Christians, I think the answer is probably offensive, but if we were Yale students, just average Yale students, offensive or not offensive?
I mean, you're objectifying women. So, I mean, so that's the kind of thing. My reaction to that is less visceral. So the example that I was going to give is like dressing up like an Asian person, like doing something with your eyes. Doing something with your eyes, Coyle, is that offense? And dressing up like a Vietnamese rice farmer.
Or a court mandarin.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to be safe and go with offensive, but I'm going to wonder in the back of my mind.
That's the correct answer, Coyle. Good job.
There's a great SNL episode on this, by the way, if you haven't seen it. I'll put them in the show notes.
I think that's pretty offensive, again, because it is objectifying and exotifying Asian people.
What about a poncho and a sombrero, Ed? Offensive or not offensive?
Yeah, yeah, okay. And so, I mean, that was an issue here. I think that's... So my visceral reaction to that is less than my visceral reaction to somebody dressing up like a court mandarin.
Which is there is a subculture of, Americans who love... Especially Japanese stuff. I don't know as much about... I don't know if that same subculture exists for China and Korea and Vietnam. But I knew people at the University of Wyoming, of all places, who were like, I love Japan. I love everything about the culture. And every year at Halloween, they put on a kimono and a samurai sword.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Whatever you call it. I guess there's a microaggression. I assumed it's called a kimono. I don't know what they're called. But they put on, like, the full samurai regalia and...
Yeah.
So again, offensive or not, it was genuinely done out of love for the culture.
I'll just tell you that, like, Asian people are leery of white people who are a little bit too interested in our culture. That kind of fetish, and like that totally plays into like this whole exoticization.
Sure, sure, sure.
And objectification of the alienness of Asian people, man. So I'll say I'm obviously a lot more sensitive to somebody like what's his name in Breakfast at Tiffany, who dresses up? Mickey Rooney. Have you seen Breakfast at Tiffany?
I've not.
That's an amazing movie. That's an amazing movie. But Mickey Rooney, that's his name, isn't it? He dresses up like an Asian. Like he's an Asian.
That sounds right. I feel like I've seen that scene.
You know, so would I show that movie in class? I might show that movie in class, but with a lot of commentary in advance of it and after it. My point is that I obviously find that a lot more offensive than I find somebody dressing up in a sombrero, like in a personal way. But I would say, yeah, you shouldn't dress up in a sombrero. That was something that happened here. And again, it's the same kind of a thing. It's sort of like, why are we objectifying and kind of mocking a stereotype of people?
Right.
So and so cowboys and Indians. Maybe I shouldn't even say cowboys and Indians.
You know what I'm saying? I can go as a cowboy, Ed. You cannot, right? Offensive.
Well, certainly dressing up like a Native American. I think it's the same deal.
When I was in elementary school, I think cowboys and Indians, I think that's probably left the culture, so it may not matter.
Do you think it really has completely?
I think it's largely gone. I mean, if nothing else, if you look at the number of Westerns that are made today relative to... You know, even 20 years ago, it's they're functionally dead as a genre. However often the Coen brothers might try to do one, it's just leaving the landscape. When I was in elementary school, I did elementary school on a reservation, and we were kind of actively encouraged to dress up on specific days in Native American garb, including the non-native kids on the reservation, which I can't imagine that is still the case today. I should have thought to ask my brother before we started this. He teaches there, and I just didn't. So maybe I'll try to remember to ask and throw something about that up. Cowboys and Indians, though. Yeah, man, that's a tough one. What do you think?
I mean, you know, I would never, if my son or daughter. And, like, if I'm being honest, I think, like, you know, we have a Native American costume that my mother made way back in the 70s. And it's really, really well made.
Never let anyone see it, Ed, ever.
Yeah, no, there's a very cute picture of my daughter wearing it. But, I wouldn't... If my kid came to me, if my 9-year-old boy was like, I want to be a Native American, I'd be like, no, we're not doing that. But they know better. You know, I think recently, I don't want to wrongly besmirch anybody, but I feel like at a recent Thanksgiving, half the class were dressed up like pilgrims, and half the class were dressed up like Native Americans. And I remember seeing that and being like, yeah, this is not awesome.
But that's not even for help. That's like a historical something, right?
I guess, but yeah, you know, I mean, so I'm with you. Like, it's a little bit different. And it's equal treatment, as it were, but I don't know. Again, there's just like this fetishization of Native American persons that's involved in that is
right.
Like a little bit awkward. What else? So the sexy nurse.
You don't actually have to answer that if you don't want to.
No, I think that's equally offensive because it's objectifying women. And I would never dress up like a sexy nurse.
But if you're an administrator at Yale, you don't care if people dress like sexy nurses, right?
I think you're wrong in saying that. I think they get that.
I don't remember that being included in the email. It's been a while since I read it, but
no, I would be surprised if that were viewed differently. But to get back to the story, the dean of the college, maybe it's the dean of students, sent this email just saying, "Hey, let's not do anything stupid." And now, so Yale is on a residential college system. It's like Hogwarts, right? Except instead of four houses, there are 12. Like Hogwarts, every residential college, so it's a physical space with a dining hall and people live in it, and it's like being in Gryffindor. And then it's the head of the house, though the head of the house at the Yale Residential College is called the Master, though I think they've since changed that.
I would imagine, yeah.
But the Master of Silliman College, his wife was faculty in psychology. And she does research on adolescents, and so she issued a public letter on her own sort of saying, I haven't read the letter in a while, but it was sort of defending the place of students being transgressive in that way. And I think because of her research, she kind of sees that as being an important part of adolescent psychological development. Like that just testing boundaries and transgressing boundaries is like an important part of. And so, importantly, she is the wife of the master of the college. And so the master of the college isn't just like a regular – I mean, they are professors at the college. But they also play an important kind of residential role for the students in there.
Right.
And so then after the wife of the master of the college issued this, the students on campus, and especially the African-American students – well, especially the students of color at Silliman were pissed. And there are videos of them – yelling at the master, like the master wants to have this conversation about it, and they're kind of yelling at him in a pretty aggressive, confrontational way. And then that video went viral and became a little bit of an example of concerns about free speech and sensitivity run amok. I mean, it's precisely the kind of thing that animates and concerns Haight and Lukianoff in this Coddling of the American Mind article. You know, and so, like, we followed that case closely just because we went to Yale and feel invested in that. And, like, the videos are bracing, to be sure, but I feel like most people sort of failed to appreciate the specific settings of Yale. Again, it wasn't just a professor, but it was a professor who has this special obligations as the head of this residential unit in the college to sort of care and concern for their students.
Right.
And a little bit more generally, like, if we're agreed that students shouldn't be dressing up like the SS or shouldn't be wearing blackface, I mean, like, our response to those kinds of cases is particularly, what's the word I'm looking for? Visceral. And if I'm being honest, you know, my reaction to a sexy nurse outfit, I guess, is visceral in a different kind of a way. But, you know, I find that less offensive. But, like, but if I think about it, it's pretty clear to me that I should be – that's equally offensive. And, my reaction to people dressing up like shoguns or geishas is visceral. And I recognize that, you know, dressing up as a Mexican in a sombrero and a hat, it's basically the same thing. But, like, if we find the one offensive, like, if you think that people shouldn't dress up in SS costumes, then...
I mean, I'm unwilling to equate the SS with a sombrero and a poncho.
Yeah, so I would say it's not as bad, but... Well, how about blackface?
Yeah, again, we're at sort of that cultural moment. Yeah, we're at that cultural moment where they're it's just not wise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but even beyond that, I mean, I would say it's certainly not wise. And if you do that kind of thing, you're really dumb. If you're a politician who does that kind of a thing, you're really dumb. And there's a lot of that going around back in my home state of Virginia.
Well, except that it's not like they did it yesterday.
Well, that's right. It was back when they were in high school.
Right.
But, like, you know,
in a time and place where it was. So now we're back on that. Was this offensive at the time? Was it intended to be offensive? I mean, all of those questions that we...
Yeah, you know, so, earlier. I mean, the question about intent is important here. I mean, nobody was doing it intentionally. There are these videos of these, like the blackface thing, those particular instances are old, but like the blackface thing still happens, right? There was an incident in which two sorority girls at Oklahoma, I think, were doing blackface. And so, you know, so let's talk about that. It's not like, are they racist? I have no reason to think that they're racist. Were they doing that in an intentionally racist way? I have no reason to think that they were doing it in an intentionally racist way. But that's, you shouldn't do that. That's pretty offensive. And, I mean, what were they doing? They were transgressing, they were transgressing a line.
Yeah, so, when I moved to Missouri, right as I moved here, there was a story out of our state fair where, excuse me, this clown at the state fair, at the rodeo at our state fair, put on an Obama mask and kind of did rodeo clown things around the arena. And then the big shtick, I forget exactly what it was. It was like he climbed in a barrel and then one of the rodeo cowboys roped the barrel and dragged it off or whatever. I mean, it was sort of standard rodeo stuff except for the Obama mask. And this went viral. And of course, everyone flipped out over, can you believe that all of these white people at this mostly white event, both because it's Missouri and because it's rodeo, are making fun of a black president, including, you know, dragging him off with a rope. I don't remember for sure if that was part of it, which I remember moving here and being like, oh my gosh, you know, I am a little surprised that that sort of cultural thing is going on, given where we're sort of at politically. And then, which, you know, hopefully, I assume you agree that that sounds super offensive.
That's really, really offensive.
So the backstory that didn't make the national news is he's done that. This specific clown has done that for every president since, yes, like Ronald Reagan.
Yes, I get
so,
that.
So would it have been more offensive to have left Obama out because he's black?
I'm with you. And I think pretty obviously the answer to that question is no.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was, you know, in 2013, so he'd done it for 6 years at that point. I mean, 5 years at that point of the Obama presidency without any blowback, and then it just, because of the way the internet works, it happened to blow up on him that one year.
Yeah, I mean, not just the way the internet works, but I mean, and I don't love the idea of dragging around any kind of a president.
Yeah, I don't. I don't remember that for sure. I'd have to go back.
But you know, I see your point, and that to me, that just kind of gets to the point that like it doesn't have to be intentional, like. I'm not saying that those girls at Oklahoma are racist.
Well, but context matters, though, right?
So, yeah. Well, that's exactly right.
To use your SS example, like if would it be offensive for you to dress up in an SS uniform and me to dress up in a British Royal Marine Corps uniform and go to a Halloween party and we'll reenact, you know, me bayoneting you to death, right? I mean, would that be offensive? Or is there a place for that sort of thing? Or are we just going to say, look, you can never, ever, the SS costume is gone forever?
Yeah, I think the SS costume is gone forever, Coyle.
Okay.
I'm having a hard time imagining a circumstance in which that's okay. I mean, unless it was like a dramatic, I mean, it was a play about the Second World War and people need to put the uniform on. That's a little bit different.
Right, so only in the, like, there is no room for kind of amateur theatrics like that. It's just gone.
Again, because of context, I think. So, yeah, to all of our listeners who have the SS costume in their closets and you're just looking for an opportunity to wear it, I'm going to say, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that.
So is there ever a circumstance when you can dress up as someone from someone else's culture? Like, will that Native American uniform that you've got, will that ever be worn again?
Well, the easy answer for me is no, because it doesn't fit our kids anymore.
Sure.
But, like, would I go out and buy a Native American costume for my kids? And my kids don't really play dress-up anymore because they're too old.
Right.
The answer is no. I don't think so. And, yeah. You know, and so part of it is, in like so would I dress up like an Austrian in, like, lederhosen and the shorts with the suspenders? Is that just lederhosen? I didn't even know what lederhosen specifically.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You know, and so I would say, like, the meaning of that is different. because there isn't a kind of a cultural history where we are like mocking and demeaning Austrian people in the way that there's a cultural history in which Europeans are mocking and demeaning black people or Asian people. But so I do think it's different. But like I'm not going to dress up in lederhosen. I'm not going to let my kids dress up in lederhosen or like, you know, I guess my daughter, there was like, this was when she was considerably younger. There was like an art fair at school. And I think it was around Halloween because they were encouraging people to dress up. And so she kind of dressed up. I think we happened to have one of those striped Burgundian shirts, you know, like the blue and white stripes, like it's very like French nautical, and she wore a beret. Oh, and we actually painted in a, you know, like a little mustache. She looked very cute. Is that offensive?
It's cultural appropriation, Ed. Come on, like you can't.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if I would do that now. To all of our French listeners out there, if you find that offensive, then send Coyle an email.
Honestly, the more we talk about this, the more I'm like, yeah, we're just too touchy.
Well, you know, so there's a kind of a spectrum of things. And again, like, I think the French case is different than the blackface case. You know, it's pretty clearly different. I mean, you could say that they're on a spectrum, but they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. And maybe I think actually the French thing isn't offensive. And so some people will say, hey, you're being hypocritical. And then I'll say it has everything to do with the social context. And there just isn't a kind of a culture in which we're marginalizing French people. And that's why I think it's different. But with that said, I'm generally not, you know, if my kid wanted to dress up like that, then I'd be like, you know, why don't you put the astronaut suit on? Like, astronaut suit, that's okay. Cowboy, I think, is actually okay insofar as that's a vocation that's not connected to an ethnicity. You might disagree, and I'm happy to be convinced that I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Fireman is okay. Samurai, not so much. But samurai isn't as bad as SS outfit, you know, which isn't as bad or is as bad as blackface.
Right. Well, and as you say, there is just a massively different context with blackface that even the SS outfit doesn't necessarily match. Well, that was a long rabbit trail on costumes.
You know, but I think that's kind of nice because I think in some ways people's attitudes are, it's just a costume, what's the big deal? And then to me, like, once you start poking at that a little bit, then I think it's pretty clear that, so there's the stuff that's really offensive and everybody's like, yeah, that's really offensive, you shouldn't do that. And once you poke at that a little bit, then you start to see that, like, no, there's actually, that category of stuff is a lot bigger. And people respond against that. Like, so I hate the hate article, or Height, however you pronounce his name.
Right.
I mean, in many ways, it's thoughtful and it's balanced. But there's just a way in which the general tone of the article is like, hey, people are being too sensitive. And then I want to say, well, look, is blackface, is that offensive? And then the answer to that question is yes. Yes, blackface is offensive. And then it's a pretty short walk down to like other things. And again, like, what, you know, why do people find these microaggressions to be offensive? Because they happen all the frickin' time. And after a while, it just gets a little bit tiresome.
Yeah, and certainly, even with the, I mean, they also talk about safe spaces, right? Which was related to the Yale costume thing. That was, at least it was mentioned in the videos under the discussion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even there... obviously, especially on a college campus and especially in a residential college campus, got to be sympathetic with the, look, I want a place where I can go, and seems like my dorm room would be a reasonable place where I can go and sort of get away from all of this and not have to deal with all of the thoughtless, racist, sexist, whatever things that come along. I am practicing homosexual, I have this place where I want to go, and I don't want to have to hear that it's a sin. And is it really unreasonable for me to say, hey, none of that in here, right? So yes, I certainly think we should have sympathy for all of that. Now the other side of that is, well, we were talking about this in class today, right? The difficulty with saying something like that with, say, a dorm room, for example, is you can say, look, I don't want to have to go to my dorms and hear things that I don't want to hear. Well, you're telling the person that you disagree with, you don't get to say what you want to say, right? It's a safe space for me, but not a safe space for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess, though.
Right. My offensiveness trumps your speech, but or my being offended trumps your speech. Your being offended does not trump my speech. If that makes sense.
Well, and what is the thing that is offensive to you that I get to say?
Yeah, so the example that we were using in class is, again, let's assume a kind of traditionalist conservative with a traditionalist sexual ethic, the homosexual who doesn't, I mean, it would be one thing if you just said, all right, no one gets to say anything about this at all, right? That would be one thing. But if it's, I'm a practicing homosexual and I'm going to put a sign on my door and I'm going to, you know, sort of announce to the world, I am a practicing homosexual, no one gets to say anything to me about that, right? That's the example of, well, what you're saying is your speech wins, the other person's speech loses, right? And if they say anything, you're offended and you get to shut them down. You're saying something and they're offended, but they don't get to shut you down. All of that, I think, ties in. And it's, again, it's another good reason never to be a college administrator, because you got to sort through all of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's not an easy answer. And both of them have understandable desires, right? I get wanting to have a place where you can go and be protected from the things that you don't want. That's in some ways what a home should be. And when you're on a college campus, the dorm is your home. Ed, you look really thoughtful.
Yeah, I've thought about those kinds of issues less. That's the brilliant thing that I have to say.
Okay.
So if a student wants to put one of those fish with legs on their door as a kind of an anti-Christian symbol,
and says, you can't put the Jesus fish on your door.
Well, that's obviously silly, I think.
Well, and yet, is it a violation of my safe space? Right? Is it so offensive that they have to take it down?
Mm. Well, that's tricky. I will say, and I haven't thought about that a super ton, so I'll say that both of those things are in the same boat, and it's either got to be both or none.
Right.
I'm open to the idea that in dorm rooms, I mean, because of the fact that they're where people are living, like, we should be unusually sensitive towards that. A dorm room door is different than a bumper sticker. Let's just say that.
Right.
You know, there was a case here. This actually literally just happened in my town.
Okay.
Somebody from my church told me that on their street, somebody hung a noose in front of their house. It was like hanging. I couldn't quite get it. It was on their property, but it was like hanging over their sidewalk. And so importantly, they didn't take this noose and hang it in somebody else's house. They hang it in front of their own house. Apparently this person is an avid Trump supporter and sells guns out of their house.
So wait, the Trump supporter had someone leave a noose in his house, or someone else did that?
No, the Trump supporter in front of their own house, they hung a noose in front of their own house.
Like just a noose?
Yes.
Okay. That's vague, I guess. Like, do they live in an African-American section of town?
No, but certainly there are, I believe that there are some African-American people who live there.
Again, sort of so culturally tone deaf, right?
Well, no, it isn't. It's very culturally tone, what's the opposite of tone deaf? That's kind of offensive, actually, Coyle.
right. I've said it multiple times this episode, right?
Yeah, probably both of us have. And, you know, that's an instance in which I'm sure I use that word all the time, and some people would be like, that's offensive. And,
well, some people can refer to my trigger warning in front of my classes.
Anyways, it's not being unaware of cultural symbols. It's being super aware of cultural symbols, right? It wasn't an accident. Like, they were just looking to stuff to hang in front of their house, and they're like, well, we could hang the bird feeder, or we could hang the cross, or we could hang the noose. Oh, let's just hang the noose. I think it's prettiest. I mean, they hung it up there precisely because they know what it means.
And that's sort of yet another category, right? Because you're obviously trying to make a political statement.
Yes.
Which is you know, a very different category of speech than everything we've been talking about so far, right? That actually kind of receives maximum protection.
Maybe So I guess I would say this. You describe that as political speech. How is that political speech?
Is it
the noose? The noose means I am conservative. What is that?
I'm sorry. Maybe I misunderstood you. You said this person is like gun salesman, Trump paraphernalia everywhere.
Yes. Yes.
Right. I guess if you want to say that the noose is unconnected to the rest of that.
Well, it's connected, but I wouldn't say that it is an instance of political speech.
What would you call it?
Well, what is the political meaning of it? So this is what I would call it, an intentional act of provocation.
I would agree with that.
It's a big middle finger.
It is that. But
I wouldn't say that that is political speech. It got taken down for what it's worth.
Right. I would guess someone else would break onto the property and take it down.
Well, maybe that happened. I just heard that it got taken down. I'm assuming that the city council stopped by and were like, hey, you can't hang that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, some of that would depend on, and this is what the Supreme Court has said, is that those sorts of things are allowed as long as the action you're taking.
Sorry, what?
No, that was an interesting thing on your side.
No, sorry. Yeah. So to the listener, I have a standing desk and I've been sitting and now I'm just standing. It's pretty awesome.
So where are we at? Oh, yeah. So the question of – so like with burning a flag, right?
Mm.
The speech is protected even if it's offensive.
Yeah.
As long as it is a symbolic action, right? So as long as it is a symbolic activity. If I light a flag on fire for the purpose of torching my house and claiming the insurance money, right, that's not symbolic action. That's arson and fraud. So that speech would not be protected. If I light a flag on fire for the purpose of making a political statement, mm-hmm. which is usually what happens when people burn flags, that is protected. I'm not an attorney, but I would assume that that would fall in that same category, right?
Yeah.
Unless there is, you know, someone's specific name written on the noose saying, hey, this is for, you know, Joe Smith, in which case then you can start talking about it's a specific threat and it's not protected. Symbolic conduct, right? It is a political in the broadest sense of the word statement.
Yeah.
And we can say, hey, I don't like that and this guy's wrong and I'm going to tell him he's wrong. I would say as Christians, we're obligated to tell him that he's wrong.
That's a good example. I guess I don't feel like a noose is political speech in the way that a burning of the flag is. Like, what does the noose say? It's a form of protest? It's pretty, and you know, and unlike the hanging of the flag, it's threatening in a particular kind of a way. Like, directly threatening, given the history of lynching in the United States.
Sure. The general rule is as long as it is not specifically targeted at any one person, it's offensive, but it's free speech.
Yeah, I guess so. And so, you know,
I'm also assuming he's the property owner, right?
Yes, he is the property.
Yeah, let's assume that he's a property.
I mean, what if I took just a big picture of a naked woman and pasted it to the side of my house?
Yeah, So I don't know. I'm not an expert in the law there, but I think there would be all sorts of questions about, do you have her permission, right? And those sorts of things.
What if it's me? It's just a big naked picture of me.
Yeah, you may be asked to explain what kind of symbolic statement you're making.
It's not. It's beautiful art.
Right. You know, honestly, I don't know. I don't know the law governing art, but there, you might get away with that if you know. Like, this let's
I mean, I can't believe it's taken us this long to get the flag burning, and then the obvious related issue to that is the NFL players kneeling during the national anthem.
Right. I will cheerfully say, people are way too touchy about that. Like, yeah, maybe you're offended. I don't care. Deal with it and watch the football game. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I get not wanting to support the NFL because there are so many ridiculous things about the NFL aside from that, and not wanting to go to games because tickets are insanely expensive and concessions are massively overpriced and all of that. But, yeah, to the sorts of people who are offended by people taking a knee during the anthem, untwist the knickers and enjoy the game. But again, yeah. I'm not a good bellwether here, right? I am not the person that you ought to be listening to about whether or not you should be offended, because my default answer is going to be probably not. Possibly, as you said, because I'm a white guy.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I think that and other instances are different. Importantly, we've been talking about this stuff for a while. You can email us and ask us why I think that. Why we think that.
Right.
But anyways, we should probably start to try to wrap things up. Is there anything else that you wanted to get to, Coyle?
I don't think... Oh, we should talk maybe just for a minute theologically. As Christians, right, we have this nuanced relationship with offense, where we are the offenders against God by virtue of our sin, and we are offended when we hear the gospel and are told that we are sinners and that we cannot redeem ourselves and that we need God to save us through this atonement. So in a sense, Christians should be better at thinking about personal offense than anyone else. Now, that doesn't mean we are, but we should be. And that should inform, as you were talking about earlier in the episode, that really should inform a lot of the way that we speak to and with the world. We should certainly never intentionally be offensive. Right, we should, and now we're back on being offensive rather than being offended, because that's just easier to talk about. We should also generally have really thick skins, because the offense that we have committed against God is always going to be greater than anything any human being has ever done to us. And keeping that in mind, the scale of being offended should be not non-existent, right? But it should be balanced against the weight of our own sin, which again doesn't mean no response. It doesn't mean that we never react, but it does mean that we react in a broader context as laid out in Scripture. And I think there's something to be said for apologetics here, and these are sort of scattered theological topics, but I think they're all valid. When dealing with non-Christians, I think it is important that the offensive part of us ought to be the gospel and nothing else, right? And that's harder and harder as our culture gets more and more polarized, especially in an age of Trump, right? It should be this is the gospel, this is what you need to hear for salvation, not this is the gospel and make America great again, or not this is the gospel and here's what Bernie Sanders is going to do for us, or whatever. I'm kind of rambling at this point. Ed, do you have anything to add on that, on any of that? That's like 7 points there.
So, yeah, I mean, in general, I think our attitude should be being deferential to other people.
Right. Yeah, and again, I agree with that. You can go back and re-listen to the episode if you want to hear my thoughts there.
Okay. Well, considering our topic today, I think we got that through that pretty easily.
If not quickly.
Yes. Yes. I didn't. Once again, I was hoping to get in closer to 75 minutes, but I don't think it's possible for you and I to get in closer to that. But Anyways. Well, The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network, a great forking network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. She's forking amazing. Please check out the other great forking podcasts in the Christian Humanist Radio Network. To get more information about our own show or any of the shows in the network, visit christianhumanist.org. Please kindly leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find the show. And you can also like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Edward Song, and on behalf of Coyle Neal, let me remind everybody to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and to render unto God those things that are God's. Have a great forking day.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway.